This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's just gone past 9:35 a.m. this Friday morning, and it's now time for The Property Show with me, Azura Rahman. It's not just our final Friday of the month, but in fact, our final Friday of the year, meaning that it's also time for our monthly property clinic with Chris Tan from Chur Associates. This month, we have a query from Charles Y, who wrote in asking, I'm facing some issues as a landlord at the moment. My tenant in my condo has complained of the water overflowing in the kitchen, which has gone on for a week. Upon speaking to management, I found out that it is a blockage that's caused by the unit above. I've been told that the contractor would need to break into the unit above's walls, and that would be messy to get to the root of the problem. My tenant is getting impatient and wants the rent to be discounted for this month. Is this right? And this is what Chris Tan had to say.
I think we can take on this question this week in two prompts, because I think first is his right as a landlord vis-a-vis the tenant's request and also whether it is reasonable or not. And the other part of it is really Charles as the owner of the unit against the unit above.
Right.
As well as his relationship with the management in that sense, or the developers, let's put it this way. So let's start with the question, since he started to say that, you know, as a landlord, what would be the thing? And now the fact that the tenant is requesting for discount, is this right? I think for Charles, the bad news is the request is actually
reasonable right.
and valid as well. Because let's put it this way, under any tenancy arrangement, the landlord's duty is to provide the tenant with the quiet enjoyment of the unit or the premises, absolutely, in that sense.
So if, this is in every landlord and tenant agreement?
Correct. No, it's an assumption.
Right. Okay.
Under the landlord and tenant things. Like, for example, the tenant is, I already pay my rent, so I'm entitled to the full use of what is expected of that unit, and if it's interrupting my full use and my comfort in it and whatnot, so such thing is reasonable request to say that, you know, because I'm not getting the full use, perhaps I should have a discounted rental, you know, or perhaps I should be entitled to something else and whatnot. So because it's really his right for the full enjoyment, unless the tenancy agreement have specific specification just to say that, hey, I don't care, you pay, this is it, I'm not going to do anything, you take it as is it, if there's water flowing through and whatnot, we're not going to do anything. That's why you see that a lot of time, you know, as a landlord, you have to take care of your tenant's complaint. So when a tenant call that, you know, you say that the toilet have problems, so you have to come and fix it, you know, whatever that is. So it depends on the tenancy agreement. But most of the time, the tenant has the right to request. Yeah.
Is it actually fair in the eyes of the law for a landlord in a contract to actually completely waive of such rights for the tenant? Is it seen as an unfair contract term, for example?
Not really, because let's put it this way, it's freedom of contract,
okay.
Like I said. And also, we have to look at the whole thing. Like, for example, if it is done on a bargain, in that sense, if those circumstances did arise, for example, perhaps it was double the price earlier, all right, and it was a norm in that market to do that. If you can prove that, you know, the fact that I actually cut half the price so that I can rent it out in that condition,
right,
then perhaps it's reasonable. Just to let you know that the law is not there to get you out of any bad bargains. The law don't play that role in that sense, especially when there is no such thing as a specific statute in Malaysia, like we said.
We don't have
the Landlord and Tenant Act. So in that sense, your tenancy agreement is actually the Bible in that sense.
Right.
You know, the main agreement. So you take a look at it, and if they stated like that, so be it. And
caveat emptor, right?
Correct. So unless the tenant said, I am not known about these things, because there's also no such thing as a standard tenancy agreement. And because of that, then both parties are free to negotiate the term and specification. So just on the context of being a landlord and tenant situation, in this, I think it's only natural that the landlord would need to fulfill the request of the tenant, like I said, unless it's otherwise provided in the tenancy agreement.
Now, I think a lot of people who's listening would say, well, it's not the landlord's fault. It's someone else's fault. Why should, you know, the landlord have to compensate for something that wasn't caused by his mistake?
Let's put it this way. The contract is signed by two parties. The other party did not sign. The person purportedly at fault did not sign that agreement. So let's put it this way. When we draft any agreement for that purpose, if there's only two parties involved, when we start to allocate the duty. And this is not like the intervention that is beyond control. Like I said, unless you talk about act of God. For example, if lightning struck the unit and it's burned down, therefore not fit for occupations and whatnot, those would have a force majeure kind of clauses in there. But this is purely within the control of the landlord still, because you have to understand, in order for a good tenant or for the quiet enjoyment of the premise, as I used the word earlier, you must provide a good environment or in the premises in that. So there's no such thing as unfair here.
Right.
Because in a contracting party, no matter what you look at it, in a civil promises, someone must have to promise something that he can deliver, and the other one, based on the promise that you make, in exchange, I give you another promise, which is a consideration for the enjoyment of whatever services or product that you are offering.
Right.
So in this sense, I think it's fair. And I also say that there's no such thing to say that it's not beyond the control. I mean, of course, let's not forget, in this context, we're talking about Charles being a landlord,
right,
and
right,
not being the owner.
So just, you know, just to draw a point from this, let's say if it's the case where you, as someone who is dwelling in a house as a tenant,
yep,
as opposed to the owner-occupier, and if you have disputes with your neighbours, whether, let's say, it's a boundary dispute or if it's something else that's actually impinging on the enjoyment of the property for you as a tenant, you should firstly go to your landlord as opposed to dealing with the neighbour.
Of course,
directly.
Of course. You
right,
have no
okay,
right to, in that sense, you have lesser right compared to the landlord, because
okay,
the landlord is the owner. So the thing is that the legitimate title owner in that sense is really the registered owner,
right?
So, and not the tenant. So so this is where a lot of time people are confused. Like I said, on the first segment, like I said earlier, for Charles, he must put on the cap as a landlord. So do not actually confuse it with the other cap, which is as the owner.
Right. Yeah. So basically, don't think that just because you have a tenant, it means that you have absolved of your duties.
In fact, your duty is quite high. Let's
higher
put this
even.
Because for all intent and purposes, particularly in relation to the tenancy agreement, the landlord would have a very, very high expectation in that sense to provide a usable premise,
right?
You know, and in that sense, it is absolutely fair for the tenants in requesting it, unless there is a proof that the tenant is actually contributing to it. You know, did not make mitigations in that sense. For example, he could have done it so that it doesn't better or manage it better, so that he could don't have to face the problem in the scale and extent that he's facing now,
right,
if there is such thing. Right?
Okay, yeah. In this case, the tenant has asked for a discount from the rent. How do you quantify something like this then, Chris?
I think there's no way we can quantify it. There's no an objective standard to say that, oh yeah, if it's 20% of the house, therefore 20%.
There's no out-of-pocket expenses
correct,
as well at the
correct,
same time, right?
So I'm saying that we do not know. It could be still out-of-pocket expenses.
Right.
We probably, you probably have to get a plumber to come and fix every 2 days, you know, before it got break again, you know. That
definitely
kind of
has to be.
Yeah,
so compensated.
Correct.
Right?
And whether the reduction of the thing is actually subject to party negotiation.
Right.
I don't think that anyone would really, really want to litigate based on this,
right,
because it's too tedious, and
right,
also there's no official formula for it. And I think the worst case is this, you know, the landlord in this case, which is Charles, have to bear this in mind. You end up losing the tenant.
Right.
If this is not fixed, I mean, discount is the smallest thing that you can actually think of. If you don't fix it, probably if the 2 year tenure could be end prematurely.
So a discount is reasonable, but to maybe strike off the entire month's rent would be slightly unreasonable in that case.
Yes.
Would you agree, Chris?
No. Put this way, the tenant do have some use of the place, so we can say that there's no such thing as 100% striking off of the rental. Or the discount would be to such an extent. But I'm just saying that to the extent that it affects you.
Right.
You know, the rest of the building, you're still using it to sleep, to do whatever. The fact that they are still talking about discounted rent, the fact is that the tenant is still in there.
Okay.
So there is some partial enjoyment of the premises.
Okay, so we'll talk about the second part of this problem. Charles' duty, more likely Charles' rights as an owner in this predicament. I'm speaking to Chris Tan from Chir Associates with our monthly legal property clinic on The Property Show. It's Azura Rahman on The Property Show. Here with me is Chris Tan from True Associates, and we're going over a bit of a conundrum sent by one of our listeners, and his name is Charles Y. And he said, I'm facing some issues as a landlord at the moment. My tenant in my condo has complained of the water overflowing in the kitchen, which has gone on for a week. Upon speaking to management, I found out that this is a blockage caused by the unit above. I've been told that the contractor would need to break into the unit above's walls, and it would be messy to get to the root of the problem. In the meantime, I can't get a hold of the unit's owners, who seems to be away. My tenant is getting impatient and want the rent to be discounted for this month. Is this right? So we've gone over the second part of the problem, really, where Charles' predicament as a landlord, basically, yes, he has to compensate the tenant by giving some kind of discount, that kind of thing. But as an owner, he still has to resolve this issue of this blockage happening caused by the unit above. The owners are away. Sounds very messy. What happens next, then, Chris?
Okay, first of all, there's a few assumptions for Charles here based on the question sent in, so that we can get that clear first before we proceed to give an answer.
Okay.
I would think that since you talk about unit above, it's necessary means a high-rise or a strata development.
And, so you mentioned a condo, as a matter of fact, right?
Fine, mm-hmm. In that sense. So I would think that it's actually separately owned, different owner, and there's management involved. So I can assume that Charles' unit is a strata unit.
Okay.
So therefore, we'll draw the assistance of the Strata Management Act in this sense. So under Section 142 of the Strata Management Act, it mentioned that if the leakage is from the unit above, the presumption is that until it is proven otherwise, it is actually the duty of the parcel above to actually rectify the problem.
Okay, so there's a specific
statutory assumption
under
the Strata Management Act. So the question is that if you have some leakage from the unit above, and if it is not been proven otherwise that it's not caused by the unit above, then the assumption is that it is the duty and responsible of the unit above, the owner of the unit above, to actually pay for the rectification. So I think it's very important in this sense. Again, we look at the questions by Charles. He said, upon speaking to the management, so again, I'm guessing that there's no black and white. All right, he said, I found that the blockage is caused by the unit above. So then the next question is that, again, is it the unit above? Again, we are just saying that it's actually oral evidence, in that sense. The management could be taking a guess rather than really having the expansion. So really actually inspect and actually find out like that. So I think a good way for Charles to handle this is this. Number one is that, first and foremost, if this is still new, if still within the defect liability period, so one of the recourse that possibly you can do is to notify the developer to rectify the problem, as required under the sales and purchase agreement, in that sense. And again, I'm guessing that this is a residential property. And if it's a residential property, then of course the defect liability with the developer is 24 months from the date of handing over. Now, if it is not covered under defect liability, which means that there's more than 24 months in that sense, then what we are suggesting Charles to do is to serve a notice to the management body. It's either the joint management body or the management corporation, whichever that is in place. Then they will carry out the inspection within 7 days. Under the law, they have to do that.
Okay, right? So management has to
carry out the inspection. Okay. And upon receiving the notice, and therefore determine, they have to make a determine. They have to do a certificate just to say they certify that they satisfied themselves that who is actually the party responsible to rectify the leakage defect, right? That caused the water overflowing in that sense. So I'm just saying to you that out of this inspection, there could be three type of outcome. Number one, it could be that the water flowing is caused by Charles' own unit.
Okay.
So for all intents and purposes, Charles have to take care of it.
Right.
Number two, it could be caused by the unit above. So when they give a cert to say it's caused by a unit above, then the owner of the units above then will have to pay for it. And if they are not cooperative to prove that they are not the one to do it, that caused the water flowing, then what happened is that Charles can proceed to do that and bail them accordingly. If they go to court and whatnot, or the Strata Management Tribunal, you can actually have the right to do that. And the third possible outcome is actually to say that it's actually part of the common property. So because it did mention here, the contractor did mention you have to break into the unit's wall,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And so I'm just wondering that could it be actually not part of the unit, all right? Could it be a common property, a common piping throughout the whole building in that sense, all right? So if it is a common piping throughout the building, it's a common property per se, then no one have to pay for it, save for the MC, the management corporations have to take out the maintenance fund and sinking fund to actually rectify it.
Okay, I'm giving you a fourth possible outcome.
Right, sure.
Let's say that it was found in the unit above's property that's actually causing this blockage. And what if the plumber said, for example, because it's happened before,
sure.
I've heard it before,
sure.
for example, where it is for a unit that's recently completed, the debris from construction that has caused blockage. And, you know, whose fault is that then? Is it the management's fault? Is it the developer's fault?
No. Let's put it this way. The debris of constructions and whatnot, let's put it this way. If you can prove that, like I said, okay, I think the law is quite clear and fair in this manner, right? When I say that if this actually resulted from the unit above, all right, and if it's actually the debris that's actually get clothed there and whatnot, to me, is from the unit above.
Right.
All right. So first thing first, you pay the unit below. That's number one. Number two is, and then your recourse will be as the
with
owner
the
of the unit with the management and or with the developers who's doing this if they are not clean in those things. Why not? So I'm just saying to you is that it's one thing and another.
Right. Okay.
All right.
So it's two different chains in that sense.
So in that sense, if you look at Charles, in this situation, he actually have two causes of action here, in the sense that if he go into court and fight with the tenant have the right to claim for the discount,
mm-hmm.
all right? But if he go to the court and now fight with either the MC or the unit above, depending which is the root of the cause and whatnot, he can then submit his losses right. under the tenancy agreement
right.
And claim from that person. So again, like I said, it's about the hat. You know, while we can say that it's not me, but then again, the action have to stop somewhere. So we're saying that, yes, you will have a potential dispute with the tenant and the tenant will potentially have a claim, a successful claim against you. You might make some losses and the losses then would have to be compensated by
the unit above's owners or the management.
Correct. So the defaulting party. So we are only looking at two cases here.
Right.
That's why I said it's important to see it clearly and start to break the chain.
Right.
Because if you keep saying that, you know, it's not me and whatnot, then very simple, the person will say, the management will say, yeah, yes, debris is fine. That's because the unit above you, again, when doing the construction or doing the renovation work, their contractor is not doing thing.
Right.
Then that person will then say, oh, yeah, so it's not me again because it's the contractor that I engage. Then contractor says, no, it's not me, the subcontractor again. Right. So where does that end? So right. again, we have to draw the line everywhere.
Right. So the realities of living in a condo in that sense, right,
yeah.
Chris? Well, in his case, he's lucky because, well, despite the fact that the unit above seems to be away, they are actually occupying the unit above.
Yep.
But there are some cases, especially in KL, for example, where things are not fully occupied, where, you know, buildings are only 70% occupied and the owners can be, you know, you can't actually contact the owners. Just as a hypothetical situation,
sure.
What would you do in that scenario then?
Let's put it this way. If you really cannot contact the developers and... the unit owner in that sense. Another recourse that you can actually do is commissioner of building. Because the commissioner of building in a strata development is actually an enforcement officer
right.
kind of thing. So they have wide power in that sense. Probably they can use one of those statutory powers they have and intervene in this case. And of course, if you want to be very, very protected in that sense as the claimant, all right, you probably want to have a pronouncement from the Strata Management Tribunal or from the court even before anything to happen. So I would suggest consult the professional or even make a trip down to the Commissioner Building office and see how they can help you in this regard.
Okay, Charles Y, one thing you are completely accurate about, it is going to be messy in more ways than one for this scenario. If you have any messy queries yourself regarding your property, write in for next month to inquiries@bfm.my. Chris Tan from Chair Associates, as always, will be answering them. If you've missed any bits of this interview, don't forget to download our podcast from www.bfm.my. It's not easy being a landlord, something that many people don't think of when purchasing property for investment purposes. From overseeing repair works to ensuring that your tenant pays on time, don't be fooled when someone says it's an easy way to earn passive income. Now, if you are looking at something to purchase, whether for investment or to stay, here's something for you to consider. That's AERA, A-E-R-A, and that's near Taman Medan in PJ, Selangor, developed by Chin Hin Property Development. Service residence units on leasehold land with a built-up of 719 to 1,010 square feet, with prices starting from 300,000 ringgit to 507,000 ringgit. Quite reasonable prices there in Taman Medan in PJ. That's it for this week on The Property Show. Join us again next week where we'll go through some of the most pertinent issues in the real estate market every Friday at 9:30 a.m. after the news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.